Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, according to John.
Glory to you, Lord Christ.
At the Last Supper, when Judas had gone out, Jesus said, "Now the Son of Man has been glorified, and God has been glorified in him. If God has been glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself, and will glorify him at once. Little children, I am with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and as I said to the Jews, so now I say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." This is the Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Christ.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Be seated, thank you. I want to just thank everyone for allowing me to come here today. Can you hear me? Okay, can you hear me now, Mac? Good, okay. I'd just like to thank everyone, Reverend Gail, Pastor Gail, and everyone, all the official people who are keeping us together as a community and a congregation, and leading us in our worship every Sunday in the absence of Reverend Karen. Thank you also for the music, and I believe Deacon Dan for his leadership as well. And finally, for all of you for being here on this rainy morning, braving the storms to come. I also like to thank you for inviting me to be a part of your congregational sabbatical journey. I wrote this actually, but I'd like to offer a few thoughts here in this short homily, and then expand, add to them, and hear from you in dialogue in our short workshop later on. And all are invited to attend that session. I notice and commend St. Barnabas for having a land and peoples acknowledgement. It represents a commitment to see and to be seen. You can find it on the back cover of the weekly bulletin each week. It's also important to occasionally recite that, so I will read it for you. St. Barnabas Episcopal Church acknowledges that we gather on the traditional land of the first people of this island, the Suquamish people, who are still here, and we honor with gratitude the land itself and the life of the Suquamish tribe. I know that you have my short biographical statement in the newsletter, but I am still very new to most of you, so I'd like to offer a few additional details regarding my own faith journey. I grew up in Atlantic City, New Jersey, in the African American community and in the Black church. My earliest memory of church was accompanying my aunt for long days in her Pentecostal church, where she would play the electric guitar and I would play a conga drum that was about as tall as I was at the time. Later, I attended Shiloh Baptist Church, which was my father's church, and the one that the whole family would attend regularly. Those were also long days. I was then expected to make my own decisions and choices after a while, so I chose the African American Episcopal Church, which remained my church, though had no immediate connection to my family, throughout most of my high school days. onward to college, where a liberal arts education introduced me to Buddhism, a thread and a tradition I've been following and practicing ever since. So I'm inspired by your intentional work of exploring issues of race as they intersect with your faith through your work with the Sacred Ground program. When Jesus says, "Love one another as I have loved you," you've taken this to heart and are doing the work in the world. And clearly, after the most recent event of mass murder in Buffalo yesterday, that work, intentionally and fearlessly undertaken, is an urgent calling and an undeniable imperative. The event in Buffalo puts our work in context, puts our worship in context, and provides a profound answer to why we do this work. Simply put, because we care, and we were told not to make a distinction between yourself and others. Let's have a moment of silence for the victims of that crime and also their families and everyone who is particularly hurt by that crime. Thank you. So, spring comes but once a year, and it's spring's time now. How could we not notice what we've waited for in all the months prior? Every walk witnesses a performance of some flowering or leafing out event. But even now, as the struggle over seasonal darkness and light is clearly being won by spring, winter resists with cooler days and evenings, storms, and a nearly incessant cloud cover that has an obscuring effect on our longer hours of sunlight. Nonetheless, spring is here with its lilacs and camellias, our returning winged relatives, its fragrant graces, and a renewal of our confidence and fulfillment of our faiths, that even with the signs of climate change all about, we can still depend on the cycles of the earth, however altered one way or the other. It's a confidence and a faith that the ground beneath us and about us will hold, even with the necessary and sometimes urgent adjustments that we make individually each day and collectively over the course of decades or histories. What does it take to maintain the faith that the ground will hold? So let's give a moment as we sit in our seats to get grounded by feeling our feet on the stone floor beneath our seats and imagining the soil and the earth below the floor. And even as we sit, feel the energy from the earth coming up through the stone floor into your feet, into your legs, into your torso, into your chest, into your shoulders, into your head, and enjoy the resulting sense of uprightness. Let's also give a moment from that solid place in which we sit to consider the sources of our faiths and their interactions and our interactions with our society. The sabbatical journey you're intentionally taking is through the intersections of faith and our shared daily social life. It was pointed out to me recently that grace and privilege have some unexpected similarities and insightful differences. You're probably aware of the privilege of which I speak because it's in the news a lot lately and has entered the popular social discourse, and in fact was a primary theme of the Sacred Ground program itself. There are many kinds of social privilege. For instance, the privilege associated with gender, ability, sexual orientation, and other socially defined categories of people. They're all related, of course, in that they are designations that society assigns at birth, and on the basis of which society distributes benefits and penalties that provide opportunities or sets limitations, and even determines the quality and the duration of the life of individuals and communities. Our focus today, though, is on racial privilege, referred to in our current context as white privilege. In 1989, Peggy McIntosh, a white woman working in academia, became focused on the male privilege she and her colleagues encountered and had to endure in the university context. As her understanding of this notion of the systemic nature of male privilege grew, she extended her analysis to race relations and wrote a groundbreaking essay that many of you may have read called White Privilege: Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack. She defined white privilege as an invisible package of unearned assets that I can count on cashing in each day, but about which I was meant to remain oblivious. White privilege is like an invisible, weightless knapsack of special provisions, maps, passports, code books, visas, clothes, tools, and blank checks. So racial privilege is one that results from our racialized social conditions and experiences. And Isabel Wilkerson, in her book, Caste: The Origins of Our Discontent, lays out the history and the framework of the racial caste system in the United States, comparing it to caste systems in South Africa and India. Racial privilege is not distributed evenly. It is distributed on the basis of race and bestows unearned advantage relative to others, advantage that begins in the womb and lasts throughout life and can even be passed on for generations. Grace, on the other hand, is received as a gift. It can be ardently sought through prayer, but is not guaranteed. Grace is not earned, but frequently bestowed and experienced when a person slows down and develops an awareness of its presence. Grace might indeed appear to confer a sense of advantage, but it's not an advantage to be used against, as in a competition. While racial privilege confers dominance, in Peggy McIntosh's words, grace confers a generosity of spirit. Racial privilege depends on ignorance, of which denial of its possession is a form. On the other hand, grace dispels ignorance and cuts right through to our spiritual ground, right through the social constructions that are maintained by our purposeful or habitual separation of self from another. So I'd like to talk a little bit about those acts of separation that racial superiority and privilege require for their maintenance. I draw heavily from the Othering and Belonging Institute of the University of California at Berkeley for these ideas and terminologies. That act of separating self from other is known as othering. It's an act of breaking that severs even the most essential bonds of our common humanity. It's a separating of humanity along the fault lines of race, religion, age, ability, gender, and so on, and treating those categories and enforcing those categories as though they are immutable and just distinctions, which designate relative and deserved power in our daily lives. There are various levels of intensity and categories of such separative acts of breaking, from explicit bias to unacknowledged implicit bias, overt discrimination between individuals, or systemic institutionalized oppression. And at the other end, the extreme end of that spectrum, through violence itself. And yesterday's event in Buffalo is an example of what the Othering and Belonging Institute calls hard breaking. And it's also heartbreaking. While othering is that process of breaking connections, relationships, and maintaining and reinforcing distance, bridging is both the act of acknowledging and creating connections, reducing distance, and fostering unity. It's also a state or quality of being part of something larger. Bridging leads to belonging. That's the goal of bridging. Like the spectrum of actions taken to break bonds and split people, reinforcing the illusion of immutable social categories that confer power differentials that are considered just and immutable, there are a spectrum of actions for bridging as well. For example, Sacred Ground Program. Conversations or dialogues with people of diverse backgrounds and identities. Organizing or participating in educational events that reveal hidden histories of oppression, liberations, and unities. I think the congressional, I think the congregational sabbatical is a bridge to belong. I wish it was congressional. I wish I could say congressional also. I think the congregational sabbatical is a bridge to belonging, and as such, to the beloved community itself. You've come to recognize that there's a larger community matrix that's part of your church context, and you're setting out to acknowledge it, get to know it, to share yourselves with that larger community, and in so doing, embracing your own story and community in their entirety and diversity. You've made a commitment, in other words, to see and be seen. In our short workshop today, we'll go into more depth about belonging, diversity, equity, inclusion, and explore some of the attitudes and practices of culturally responsive bridging, because you're going to be going out to communities that are here on Bainbridge Island and who you may not have had connections with before, or you desire to reestablish connections. So I want to thank you for your attention and participation this morning. I hope to see you downstairs after the service. And for those and all of you involved with the congregational adventure, I want you to go forth and engage. Thank you very much.